Sai Ram, dear listeners, it's a beautiful sunny Thursday morning here in Prashanti, and it's that time of the Thursday when I meet you on this show, Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, here to offer answers to questions posed by you listeners. Of course, the answers always come from Swami, as much as the questions do too. So let us begin by offering our most loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet. Now we've truly stepped into the summer and all forecasts seem to be suggesting it's going to be one sizzling summer. So keep yourselves hydrated, keep some water for birds if you can, and if you happen to carry a bottle of water with you and you see someone struggling with the heat, do share some with them too. Now to our program. Yes, of course, we have a question today, and as always, an interesting one. A question on something that Swami always often says in his discourses. After I answer the question, if we still have time, maybe I'll read out something nice for all of you. But before all that, it's time for the quote of the week. Isn't that how we always begin the Radio Sai Answering Booth? All right then, here it comes. The quote is by a person who is in the news right now. At least people following Indian news will agree with me. Today's quote is from the Dalai Lama, and I quote, "We begin from the recognition that all beings cherish happiness and do not want suffering. It then becomes both morally wrong and pragmatically unwise to pursue only one's own happiness, oblivious to the feelings and aspirations of all others who surround us as members of the same human family. The wiser course is to think of others when pursuing our own happiness." End of quote. The quote itself doesn't need any explanation. It's a simple, direct quote, but making a very profound point nonetheless. We all seek happiness and try to avoid suffering. Of course, our individual journey should move from this attraction to happiness and repulsion to sorrow to a life guided by a higher purpose, where we accept both joy and sorrow. But when in the course of this journey, we all choose happiness over sorrow, right? When that is the case, we must empathize with this nature in each one around us. We must recognize and acknowledge the fact that everyone around too wants to be happy. No one is telling us you have to lead a miserable life. All that we have to remember is, even as we pursue happiness, can we look out for the happiness of others too? Imagine you get into a bus and take your seat on a two-seater in the bus. Let's say the person next to you is making himself so comfortable that he's occupying almost three-fourths of the seat, caring the least for you. Now that would be so irritating, right? It will spoil your whole journey too. So whatever is unpleasant to us, whatever turns us off, we must ensure that we don't do it to others. That is the very first step of goodness itself. We've heard Swami repeating over and over again, be good, do good. What is this goodness really? It is just this: do unto others what you wish others do unto you. Don't do to others what you don't want others to do to you. This is where all idea of goodness begins. If we are not firmly established in this first step, we will not be able to progress to the next step, where more of the acts we do are acts of selflessness. So we must pursue happiness by all means. We all must be happy indeed. But that cause for happiness has to expand all the time. From my happiness to our happiness. From there to I find happiness in others' happiness. And this is the way we will eventually make Swami happy, isn't it? So before we move on, let me read those lines of the Dalai Lama one more time. We begin from the recognition that all beings cherish happiness and do not want suffering. It then becomes both morally wrong and pragmatically unwise to pursue only one's own happiness, oblivious to the feelings and aspirations of all others who surround us as members of the same human family. The wiser course is to think of others when pursuing our own happiness. Over now to the questions for this week. I actually have two questions from two listeners, but essentially the questions are about the same concept. So I've decided to combine them, and one of the listeners has even sent us the question in her own voice. So we'll listen to that, then I'll read out the question by the other listener too.
Sai Ram, this is Praveena Kilpadi from Delhi. I have a question. Swami has said that when you see a quality in a person that you don't like, it's because it is there in you, it is a reflection of your own mind. I know someone who lies and cheats and is a mean person, and I know I'm nothing like that. And what about the converse of this question? What if you see a quality that you admire in a person? Does that mean that it does not exist in you? I'm a little confused about this. Can you throw some light upon this statement of Swami's? Thank you, and Sai Ram.
So that's the question by our listener, Ms. Praveena Kilpadi. She asked us the question earlier too. And the other person who I was referring to is Ms. Gayatri Vishwanathan. She had asked a very similar question. The way she had worded it was, of course, all the bad things which we hate or find in others, how can they be reflections of us? So essentially the question is same. It's about a concept that Swami would often say, that all the flaws that you see in the world outside is essentially a reflection of what is within us. So the question people often ask is, if we see something bad in a person, like, you know, if you see a thief, if you see a person who is a criminal, how can you say that badness or that evil is actually within me when I'm nothing like that and I'm actually condemning that act which is being done by that person? So this is the question. It's a question which I think troubles a lot of us. We've had many people asking these questions even before the show started. You know, people used to write to us and ask this question. Well, before we go into that, you know, as I said, this is a concept which is generally a little misunderstood. The way Swami was saying it was a little different from the way we tend to understand it. So we will talk about that. But before that, a general thing about any philosophical concept, like this is a concept about what Swami says, reflection, reaction, right? So any philosophical concept we study has two aspects. One is we first try to understand the concept as it is portrayed, as in its true essence. And the other is, how can we practically use the concept in day-to-day life? So we'll try to look at both of this, because Swami has himself spoken of both of these aspects in relation to this particular point of view, we seeing our own reflection in the world outside. But before we go into the question as such, this concept of the way we look at the world, which is central to the Vedantic approach to life, is what is important, and the whole idea stems from there. And I've quoted this shloka, I think, earlier also in a program, in an episode where I spoke about the mind. These are words of Adi Shankara in the Dakshinamurti Stotram, you know, where he says, Vishvam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijantar gatam. The essence of this shloka is, this is how the shloka starts. This is only one line of that shloka, which is a two-line shloka. The meaning of this is, whatever we see in the world, every time when we look at the world, when we look at people around us, when we interact with people, when we see a situation in front of us, we are essentially seeing the world as a reflection on the mirror of our mind. So the meaning of this particular Sanskrit verse which I read out is, the whole world is like a city whose reflection we see on a mirror. Like one speaker once beautifully explained this. Imagine that you're driving in a car and we have a rear view mirror. And let's say that you're leaving the city, right? You're driving out of the city. And when you see in this rear view mirror, you still see the city in the background, right? So it's almost like that. We always see the world as it is reflected from this mirror. And that mirror is actually our mind, right? So this is a concept which we should always keep in mind, that essentially, none of us look at the world as it is. We always look at it only as it is reflected on the mirrors of our mind. Okay? So now when we see people around, it is, we never almost see them completely, right? You know, you might, that person may be however close to you he or she may be. It could be a spouse, it could be a parent, it could be a son or daughter, it could be your best friend, it could be a colleague whom you have spent years together. But we never know a person completely, and I think most of you will agree with me on that. So when we interact with a person, most often what we do is, let's say we know 60% of that person, 70-80% of that person, if we are very close to that person. What we do is, we fill the remaining picture with our own understandings and projections, right? We actually don't see the person completely, and so much more it is true when we are talking about people whom we don't know, right? A random person on the road. Let's say we're reading in the news about somebody who's committed a crime or something like that. We don't know anything about that person, but we fill that personality we are trying to look at with the impressions in our mind. And that is what Swami says, that we hardly look at the world. And that's why it's very important to note, you know, Swami would often say this, the only person who looks at us as truly as we are is Swami himself, right? And this idea comes from this point, that all of us never see anybody in front of us completely. We are always only projecting what our mind thinks about that person and creating a personality, and we also interact with that image that we have created. This is a very important point that all of us have to keep in mind. And in the process, you know, what happens is, sometimes the image that we create of a person is completely different from that person who is in front of us. And all the time, you know, our anger, our misunderstanding, all of this arises from this. Before we move forward, I'll share one very beautiful Chinnakatha which explains this concept and where this idea that Swami says that whatever you see in the world is actually a reflection of what is within comes from. And Swami tells this Chinnakatha about Swami Vivekananda, right? Swami Vivekananda goes and meets Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, and he's got this mind full of doubts. He's wondering, who is this person? I mean, is he a genuine man? Is something wrong with him? Is he mentally off balance? And all these kind of things. Or is he trying to cheat me? Is he trying to impress me? Is he trying to, build an organization by impressing these young people? All of these things are running in his mind. And Swami says that one day Vivekananda is walking on the road with all these thoughts, and he sees a drunk man fallen on the wayside, right? This man is stone drunk and he's fallen unconscious. So Vivekananda just stands there and observes the scene. And just as he's seeing, two more other drunk people come, right? And these two drunk men who are literally tottering around and coming, they happen to be thieves themselves. So these two men look at this man who has fallen down and comment, hey, you know what, he must be a thief who must have had a very good loot the previous night, and being happy with the loot, he must have drunk himself to unconsciousness, and that's why he's fallen here. And they laugh to themselves and they walk away, right? Then after some time, another man comes by, and this man is given to epileptic fits, right? He's suffering from that. So he looks at this man who's fallen down and starts feeling very sorry for him, you know, sympathetic for him, and he says, poor man, maybe he's also got fits like me. He must have got an attack of fits and he must have fallen unconscious. So feel sorry for him and he walks away. And even as Vivekananda is seeing this scene, a sadhu comes by, a spiritual man comes by, looks at him and he says, oh, this must be a great soul who has attained Nirvikalpa Samadhi and he is oblivious about his surroundings and he is lost in his bliss. And he looks at him and Swami says that he sits down and starts massaging his feet. And when Swami Vivekananda sees the scene, it suddenly strikes him that till that point he has never seen Ramakrishna Paramahamsa as he is. He has seen this concept, seen this personality of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. He is not given time to understand him completely, but he has filled that personality in front of him with all his own impressions and ideas. All of those things and doubts and questions is, preconceived notions, what we call. So he has filled all of this into this personality, and all the time he is interacting with this Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, not the real Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. And that's when he realizes that what a wrong thing that he's doing. And Swami would narrate this Chinnakatha and say, this is what we all do all the time. We are all the time understanding people from our own prejudices and understanding, right? I'll just give you a couple of very practical examples, and you will be able to relate to that much more. And how we tend to judge people based on our approach to life. You know, we don't wait to see what is their approach to life. We have a certain approach and we tend to judge others on the basis of that. Let's say that I never speak to anyone without any selfish reason, right? Every time I go and speak to a person, I have work with him, I have something to gain from him. Otherwise, I'll never go and speak, you know, to a person lovingly or calmly or whatever it is. If that is my nature, the moment someone comes and speaks lovingly to me or very kindly to me or very humbly to me, what will I be thinking? In my mind, the thought which will be running is, what does this man want from me? Why is he being so good to me? Right? Isn't that what will happen? Because I never interact with a person lovingly unless I want something from that person. Every time a person comes and interacts lovingly with me, I am already thinking that must be he wants something from me or she wants some favor from me. This is a way in which we reflect our own approach to life to what we see. Another example I can think of is, let's say that you're a person who has left a job because you got a better offer, right? You're working in a place, you get a better salary somewhere, so you leave this job and you go to another job, and you probably do this quite often, every 2 years or something like that. And you have this colleague who's working with you, and one fine day he leaves his job and he goes for another job. You have no idea why he's done that, but the first thing which will come to your mind is, maybe he got a better offer. Right? That's the first thought which will come, because we shift jobs because we get better offers. The moment we see someone shifting jobs, the first thing which we think of is, maybe he got a better offer, maybe he's getting a better package. That is because I am seeing the world from my approach to life, right? Through the prism of how I lead my life, I am seeing everybody. And this is what we mean by filling the world with our perceptions, right? And this is not necessarily seeing, you know, when you see a bad, that evil is in you, or when you see good, it is in you. Sometimes it could just be past experience. And let's say that you've trusted a friend for very long, and after some time, he's cheated you, or he's, you know, cheated you about some money, or something like that. Now, this is a bad experience that you had. So this experience will be on top of your mind every time you interact with someone who's in relationship which is similar to the relationship that you had with a friend who's cheated you, right? That doubt will always be lingering in your mind. It's not necessary that when you see a person as bad, that bad is within you, right? It could even be these past experiences which tend to color your perception of the situation or of a person. So this is what Swami means by, you know, it is reflecting, what you see is actually a reflection of what is within. Another example I can think of is, again, let me give you a scenario which is in the workplace. Let us say that you have a colleague who is very competent, and all the time you have this fear that he is going to endanger your job or your position. Let's say that you have this thing. So when you have this fear within you, every time you look at this person, you will be judging every act that he does or every move that he makes based on this fear which is within your mind. You will all the while be thinking that, you know, he's trying to do something to usurp my position. This is not because he is what that is. This is because that fear has got into you. And I recall when we were in the second year postgraduate, we have these drama competitions in Swami's university. And the topic which was given to us that year, the topic was mirror. Right? The mirror was the topic for the drama. And we had usually used this very same concept where there is this man who has a very loving family, and all of them are, you know, all the time looking after him and always want to make him happy. They want to give him surprises. Some friend puts a doubt in his mind that his life is under danger. Somebody wants to kill him. Right? So the moment this doubt comes, now he starts seeing every relationship which he has in his house. The servant who is a very loyal servant, his brother who is very loving, his wife who is, you know, a very doting wife, and then he has his, you know, a very close friend who visits him very often at home. Because this doubt is there in his mind, he starts seeing every action of each one of these members of his family through the prism of this doubt, and he, you know, he builds a narrative in his mind that all of them are conspiring to kill him. Eventually the plot goes in such a way that it ends in a grand climax where he realizes that he's been misunderstanding the whole thing all the while because of this doubt in his mind. And this is what Swami means by saying that what you see in the world outside is a reflection of what is within. So that is why this comparison of the mind as the mirror is a very profound comparison. I've answered a couple of questions before this with the same analogy. And this mirror, the mind, is given to a lot of flaws, right? And when we do sadhana, when we undertake any kind of sadhana, Swami says namasmarana, when Swami says bhajans, meditation, japam, and all of these are all means by which the mind keeps getting purified. And when you say the mind gets purified, essentially you will start looking at the world as it is. If you see a person and you know that person only 60%, you will see that person as a person whom you know only 60%. You will not fill the rest of the image with your own ideas and your own flaws in the mind. And that's why Swami would say that all the sadhana that we do is only for attaining chitta shuddhi, or the purification of the mind, right? And when this happens, when chitta shuddhi, when you get, Swami says, you become childlike. Like, when you become childlike, you don't judge people, but you wait for people to reveal themselves. You're open-minded to what is in front of you. So that is what is the idea of reflection. So when you see something bad in a person, I mean, like the example that you've given, I don't know what was the example that you gave of maybe someone who's cheating another person. The example which I gave, which was written to us by a listener long back, that I see a thief and I call him a thief. How can that mean that evil nature of stealing from somebody is within me? It's not like that. It is, you know, it's just that when you have these fears in your mind, it kind of gets reflected in the person whom you see, whether or not that person is really doing that, right? And everything is literally a reflection of your mind. But what is obviously bad when you see a person who is performing a crime? It is not wrong in saying that this is a mistake or this is a crime. This is wrong and this is right. Because that's what discrimination is all about, right? And that discrimination is what takes us closer to the divinity within. That's what Swami says. But when our mind is clouded with preconceived notions, our own understandings, what happens is we do this process of discrimination through this clouded mind. And that is why we make multiple mistakes, especially in relationships, right? This problem comes especially in relationships between husband and a wife, father and a son, siblings. All of the time this happens because we create a narrative in our mind and we fit that person into that narrative, and all the time we are actually interacting with this person whom we have imagined, right? He's not the real person we have imagined. And that is the whole problem, and that's where this problem lies. Well, that's what Swami means by saying that whatever you see in the world is actually a reflection of what is there in you. So in the same sense, it is the same when it comes to good too. When you are a person who is all the time trying to be good to others, you will tend to see others also in the same light. You will also, you know, and that's why we use the, Hindi you say bhola, in Telugu we say amaikudu, which means that you're innocent. You judge everybody based on your innocence. I will not harm anybody. So anybody who comes and interacts with me, I will think that he or she has nothing to harm me for. Till we have a point when we have a bad experience, and that bad experience becomes like a prism in our mind, and we'll again start seeing similar experiences and people around us through that prism, right? But there is a fundamental way by which this concept which Swami says that whatever you see is a reflection of what is within is true, that all good and bad actually arise because the good and bad lies within. It is fundamentally true, but not in the practical sense, like saying that if I see a criminal and the crime is there within me, or it's not in that sense, but there is a fundamental sense in which this is true, and it is important to understand that, because when we understand that, it comes to the second part of any philosophy which I spoke about. You can use that concept. Well, for that, let me say that if you were to make a tabular column, on the left side, you list out all the bad qualities that you know. On the right side, you list out all the good qualities that you know. And when I say bad qualities, it's like anger, jealousy, greed and all of that. And good qualities, sympathy, empathy, compassion, kindness and all of that. Right? If we were to do this exercise, you will realize that every bad quality somehow or the other has its source in either fear or insecurity. Right? Every bad quality, even anger, even jealousy, even greed, all of this comes from some form of insecurity or fear. And if you look at all the good qualities arise out of, all of us know, it arises out of love. So these two emotions of fear and love, if we were to analyze it, we will realize that all fear comes from duality. In fact, there is a dictum in the Upanishads which say that all fear actually is born out of the idea of duality. And when we look at love, love also always springs from the idea of oneness. So all bad qualities arise out of duality and all good qualities arise out of oneness. And there is this example which Swami gives of the shadow, right? You know, you have the sun, you are standing in front of the sun's rays are falling on you, and there is always a shadow. And why is there the shadow? The shadow exists because you are standing there. If you were not there, the shadow would not be there, right? So all of this bad qualities which arise from duality comes from the fact that the ego is there. And the ego is what causes this shadow, which is duality, right? So as long as you exist, as long as I exist, we will have this ego which is casting this shadow of duality. And of course our spiritual journey is through the process to remove this ego altogether. But as long as the ego is there, you can have a short shadow, you can have a tall shadow, but the shadow will exist, right? And what Swami says is most of these bad qualities, most of these evil qualities will remain in us as long as we have ego. And it will remain in the form of, Swami gives the example of seeds which are there on a dried land. You have a huge tract of dry land and there's not been any rains. So Swami says that these seeds go into the soil and they don't give out saplings or don't sprout out because there's no water. But at some point when there is rain, you will find that all of these weeds and shrubs start springing up from under the ground. Swami says it's the same way. You have all these bad qualities within you. At some point, there will be some trigger by which these bad qualities start springing out, right? So when Swami says that all good and bad is within you, it is fundamentally true in this sense. As long as we have ego, all bad qualities will remain in a unmanifest form within us. And of course, all good qualities are always within us because Swami says that love is what our true nature is, right? So all bad and good qualities are within us. And now comes to the point, now it brings us to the point where what are the qualities we manifest? If good and bad qualities are within us, what are the qualities that we manifest and how do we manifest them? That's what makes us a good person or a bad person, right? And this is where this concept of reflection can be used. And that reminds me of a beautiful interaction that we had with Swami when I was a student. We were in Thrai Vrindavan, Swami's residence in Bangalore, Vrindavan. And Swami was talking to us, I think, about this concept of reflection. I don't know how it led to this topic. But literally, Swami threw out a challenge to all of us. And this is what Swami said. If you look at a person, and if you identify the flaws in that person, if you're able to see the flaws in that person, and if you concentrate on those flaws, Swami said, within a few days, you will yourself notice that some of that nature starts manifesting in you. And Swami literally said, this is a challenge. I give this to you, you can try it out, and this is what will happen. If you see a bad person, or if you see any person, and concentrate on the flaws in that person, or on the bad qualities in that person, within a very, very short time, you will find traces of that quality manifesting within you. And why does that happen so? Because as Swami said, all bad qualities are within us, either in a manifest form or an unmanifest form, right? And then Swami added, same is the case with good qualities too. When you look at a person, and if you have some, and if you find in him or her some qualities which are adorable, and if you concentrate on those qualities, you will realize that within a short period of time, you will yourself start manifesting those qualities. And Swami said, this is true. I'm opening up the challenge to you. You can try it out and this will happen, right? So this is how you use the concept of reflection, because all good and bad is within you. When we apply this concept that what I see outside is a reflection of what is within, it happens in the reverse way. The more I see good qualities, that good qualities will manifest more and more within you. The more I sense the bad qualities in others, the more and more that those bad qualities will start manifesting within us. So that is how this concept of reflection is. I'll probably quickly run through what I said so far. It does not mean that whatever bad we see in the world outside is a reflection of the bad within us. It does not mean literally in the same manner. If I see somebody who is cheating, it does not mean I'm a cheat. If I see somebody who is a burglar, it does not mean I'm a thief. It is not in that sense. But it is more about misconceptions that we go through life. When we don't know a person completely and we fill that personality that we are interacting with our own ideas, with our own approach to life, with our own fears, with our own bad past experiences, that is what Swami means by saying that most of what you see is actually a reflection of what is within, because we hardly really know any person outside. We never look at any person directly. We are all the time looking at every person that we interact with through the prism of this, through the mirror of this mind, as a reflection on this mind. And as long as our mind is not pure, which none of our minds I think are pure, we are all in the process. So as long as this mind is not completely pure, we will never see a person as he or she is. And that is why whatever we see outside, good and bad, is actually a reflection of these ideas which are on the mind. And that's why Swami gives that beautiful example of Duryodhana and Yudhishthira. When sent out, Duryodhana comes back and says that there is not a single good person in the world. Everybody is bad. And Yudhishthira comes back and says there is not a single evil person in the world. Everybody is good. And this is how it is. It is not specifically to qualities. And also, it is important to discriminate between good and bad. If every time we are going to discriminate between good and bad, it means that that bad quality is within us, I think it's going to be very complicated. It's not like that. We have to discriminate between good and bad. But keep in mind that what you see as bad, maybe it's not as bad as it really appears. Or what you see as really good is probably not as good as it really appears. So give yourself some time, especially use this in the case of relationships. Be very conscious of that. And finally, using this concept to benefit us, good and bad in an unmanifest form is always within us. That supreme love, that divine love is within us. At the same time, this ego is what gives rise to all bad qualities, because all bad qualities have their source in duality, and duality has its source in the ego. So we are capable of manifesting all of these qualities, and that is what we are supposed to consciously avoid. And one of the ways we can do that is, as Swami said, use this method of reflection. If we see a person, all of us are colored personalities, we have good and bad in us, but when we look at a person, if we are able to concentrate more on that good in them, we will start manifesting that good. But if we start focusing so much on the bad in them, on the negative in them, and, you know, we are all the time thinking of that, you know, this person is bad, this person is like this, and, you know, he's so cruel, he's so selfish, and we will see that all of those qualities will slowly start manifesting in our mind. I'm not saying this, Swami has said this. So I hope that answers the question. So thank you, Ms. Praveena, and of course Ms. Gayatri, who has asked us this question. And I'm sure this is a concept which has confused a lot of us. So maybe this gives some understanding, some better understanding. So thank you for this question and for the opportunity to answer that. So I think I still have a little bit of time. I wanted to read an excerpt from one of our articles which we have on Radio Sai. This is about an incident which occurred to Miss Rani Subramaniam. We have an entire series on her experiences with Swami. I think it's a very enlightening series. If you have the time, you should go to the Radio Sai website and try that out. You can just type in Rani Subramaniam in the search box and all the articles will show up. This particular incident which I wanted to read is about Swami is telling her about an incident which happened with the devotee and driving a lesson home about obeying Swami. Right? And this is very important for all of us, because I'm sure everybody who sends a question to our program here is keen on knowing how to follow Swami and Swami's message, right? So here is the incident. I'm going to read out that passage from Ms. Rani Subramaniam's article on Radio Sai. Another incident happened when I was staying here in Prashanthi Nilayam, which is very interesting. One day, Swami sent for me in the morning at 7 o'clock. He sent word, Swami sends word to Rani's sister, right? And sister comes and tells Ms. Rani, Swami wants you to come up. So I went upstairs. He welcomed me very nicely. Please sit down, he said. I was wondering why he sent for me and was feeling very nervous. I thought maybe I made a mistake and maybe he was going to chastise me and correct me. Swami said, Rani Ma, I have to tell you something about a gentleman who is a businessman. I was wondering why he should tell me about some businessman, but I didn't ask him anything. Swami continued, one businessman came to me and I gave him an interview. Once, in the interview, he told me he had a lot of problems and was under great tension and stress because of those business problems. I told him I would give him some spiritual practices to do and to come and see me after some time. He came after some time and again I called him for an interview and I asked him how his business problems were. It must be less, isn't it? He said, no, Swami, it is just the same. I asked him, how can it be just the same? No, it cannot be. Did you do what I had asked you to do? Swami said, I had given him some instructions. Do this in the morning and that in the evening and so on. And this businessman said, Swami, what can I say? I was so busy and so caught up in my own problems, I could hardly find time to do your practice that you advised. Then Swami asked him a question. Okay, you were very busy and didn't have time to do your spiritual practices, but at that time, when you were so busy, did you ever give up your morning coffee? The businessman said, no, I didn't. What about your breakfast? Did you give that up? Even if you didn't have it at the right time, you must have had it later, is it not? The man said, yes, Swami, I didn't miss my breakfast either. Did you miss your lunch? The man said, no. Swami asked, your tea? No. Your dinner? He said, no. Then Swami told him, how many sittings you had for deha, the body, sharira ahara, food for the body, coffee, breakfast, lunch, tea and dinner, 5 sittings for the body, which you have to drop any day. But your spirit, which is your true nature, which is really going to bless you and keep you peaceful and happy, the Atma alone can give you that. The Sharira or the body will not give you that. But for that, you didn't give even 1 sitting. And you want my grace? How can I give you grace? Swami told Rani Ma, see, people want my grace, but they don't obey my instructions. He told him, Atma Ahara is more important than Sharira Ahara. I don't know what he told him to do, but if Swami told him to do Gayatri for an hour, then he should have given that priority. That's what Swami told me. You people should give priority to my instructions and not to what you want to do. Swami said, give up Sharira Ahara but not Atma Ahara. Unless you feed the Atma, it will not awaken. That is your spirit, which is Bhagwan. which will not be available if you are feeding your body all the time, when your soul has been starving. Swami told the businessman, by not following Swami's instructions, your soul will starve. You have given priority to food for the body and no importance to the soul. How can I help you? If you want my help, you have to do what I tell you to do. That should be your priority. Ranima continues, you see, in a way, it was a general thing, but Swami also wanted me to realize that. Instead of calling me and telling me directly, do this and do that regularly, he quoted that gentleman like an example. That's all. I told my sister it was a teaching for all of us. Suppose a guru told you to read the Bhagavad Gita or to do japa or to meditate, then what if you say, I have got too much work today, so I won't read the Bhagavad Gita. If you didn't have time to read the Bhagavad Gita in the morning, do it in the evening. God doesn't say do it at this time and this time alone. If it elevates you, why are you not reading it? That is giving help to you. Are other people giving you help? Going shopping or going to see someone here and there? That's not going to help you. If we are on the spiritual path but are giving priority to the wrong things, yes, His grace will always be there because we all are His children. But it will depend on the percentage of our performance. Just like if you are a student, you will get 40% or 80% or 100% according to your performance. So it is the same with Bhagwan too. So this was that passage which I wanted to read out. I think nothing much to explain. We all have problems. We all are complaining all the time about our problems. But the solutions have already been given. The problem is not that we don't have solutions. The problem is we have not implemented the solutions. And always that's the problem, right? The real problem is not the problem, but the problem is that we have solutions and we have not implemented them. And as Swami says, even a teacher who gives you instructions expects that you follow instructions. You know, even if you get into a plane, you have the air hostess coming and giving you instructions, and they expect you to follow instructions. And here is the Lord of all Lords. Here is Bhagwan. Here is the one who is going to tell you what exactly you need. And when He tells you something, when He is telling us something, if we do not give priority to that, then it's we who are losing the opportunity. And we have no reason to complain that, Swami, my problem still persists, right? As Swami says, I have given you the solution, now it is up to you to implement it. With that, dear listeners, it's time to end this week's program of Radio Sai Answering Booth. I thank the two listeners who asked us questions. If you have a question, especially on practical spirituality, on how to apply Swami's message in day-to-day life, or if you have a problem and you're wondering what is Swami's solution to that problem, I would really be glad to host your question on this show. All you have to do is send in a mail to my personal mail ID. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. If, like Ms. Praveena, you would like to record your question and send it to me, that would be wonderful, because I always love to play the question in the voice of the person who is asking the question. You can just attach it in the mail and send it along. I most humbly offer this show at Swami's Lotus Feet. I'm going to leave the program with a very, very beautiful song, one of my favorite songs, in the voice of the Priya sisters, the famous concert duo. On the other side of the song, Brother Raghu will join you for the next episode, and I'll be back at 12:30 for the next episode of Afternoon Satsang. But I'll meet you all again at 11 a.m. next week for Radio Sai Answering Booth.
We are Loguma Sri Satya Sai Atma Dolika Lona Anandadai Anandadai Uyyalaluhuma Shri Satya Sai Atma Dolika Lona Anandadai Anandadai Uyyalaluhuma Shri Satya Sai ఆత్మడోలికలోన ఆనందనాయే